Welcome to the Hockey Writers Fantasy Forecheck, where we talk to you about all things fantasy, keeper league, redraft, and dynasty. We're going to give you hot players to pick up, prospects on the rise, sleepers you should or shouldn't think of acquiring, and prospects who are looking to break out at the NHL level. I'm your host, Caleb Kearney.
And I am Jacob Strozek.
And this is our trade deadline recap. We're going to go through as many names as we can today and talk about how their new team affects their fantasy impact. We'll start off with the top five from the TSN trade bait board, just like we did last week, and get to as many other names as we can. Okay, big episode for you guys. Jacob, how are you feeling after that trade deadline week?
It was more of a week, wasn't it, rather than just trade deadline day. So it was exciting. Some of the most moves I think I've ever seen in recent memory. I think if I remember seeing something on Twitter, it was actually the most active trade deadline the NHL has had, at least in the past 10 years. So it was exciting leading all the way up to Friday. Friday itself was kind of, you know, quiet as far as like big moves got made, but there was still a handful of, you know, kind of mid-level to decent moves that were made. So, I mean, I had fun throughout the week of going, oh, this big player's moving. Kane went
here. Yeah, for sure. Eckholm
went here. Chychrun finally moved. So it was fun.
Yeah, it was a crazy week for sure, rather than just a day. I think the 2 weeks leading up to the deadline, there was something like 43 trades, which is the most that the 2 weeks leading up to a deadline have ever had, or at least in the past 10 years have ever had. It's normally hovered in the 18 to 23 sort of range. Yeah. And then the deadline day is sort of bigger. But I think deadline day had maybe, I didn't see any official numbers, but I think it was about 20. It was about 20. I know it was less than 20 as soon as like the deadline hit and people were kind of counting up everything that had gone through that day. But definitely a lot of moves, which is super exciting. So let's hop straight into it, Jacob. Timo Meier to New Jersey. That return is something, and that's something that can be probably discussed in its own separate podcast. But Meyer's healthy now. At practice, he was on a line with Jack Hughes and Jesper Bratt. So look out. If they can find some chemistry early, that's going to be a dangerous, dangerous combination for New Jersey. A guy like Meier playing with Hughes and his playmaking ability and Bratt and everything he brings to the table, that's going to be a dangerous line. Jacob, what do you think?
Yeah, Meier is definitely the biggest fish that got moved during the whole, you know, deadline madness that happened this year. And the return, kind of like I mentioned before, was a bit underwhelming comparatively to, you know, what was assumed would be his ultimate value. When you think Meier, he's a fully developed elite scoring winger and he plays physical. He does everything across the board. So fantasy wise, he's, you know, elite, but just as a player and the return that he got, it just wasn't up to snuff. So as far as his just fantasy value goes, he's going to be playing with the top units. He's going to be playing with Hughes. He's going to be playing with Bratt. They're both scorers. They're both playmakers. That line is just a nice, complete group of people. They are all left-handed, so they miss that little bit of diversity of not having a right-hander on their wing to kind of – or at center either way to kind of – you know, balance the way that things can move around as far as the puck goes. But Meier is still going to do what he does best. He's going to score points. He's going to get hits and he's going to just light it up. Even if he wasn't playing with Hughes or Bratt, he would still be doing all of the right things. So Meier, if you had him, you should absolutely hold on to him, because he's going to have tremendous fantasy value this year in New Jersey. Not sure if he re-signs. So as far as keeping him, you might want to be a little bit wary on that. But if he does get an extension in New Jersey sooner rather than later, you might want to add him to your keeper list.
100%. He's definitely on a keeper list. I'd hold him no matter what, because if he's going to produce like he's been producing in San Jose, no matter where he goes, he will produce. You might see a bit of a dip right away with the new team, but as soon as he gets acclimated, he should kind of shoot right back up to where he was, maybe even a little bit better. You know, it depends on how New Jersey decides to deploy him compared to his time in San Jose. Jacob, why don't you tell us about the next guy who got traded in probably the least surprising trade that happened once it happened.
Least surprising? Yeah. Showtime, Patrick Kane going to the Rangers. It's every fantasy owner's dream what Kane has been doing, especially if you've been patient with him up to this point. He had a very, very slow start in Chicago, but Chicago was also, you know, terrible. So they weren't really helping him out in any way, shape, or form. But going up to the deadline, he was just an absolute spitfire. He was just trending almost straight up as far as his production goes. So if you were the kind of person that held on to Kane and were just kind of sitting in waiting for the right opportunity to get him into your lineup when he's going to get hot, last week was the time, and now is definitely the time that he's on a better team. He's not just on a better team, but he's playing with a former teammate that he has insane chemistry with, and that's Artemi Panarin. Panarin scores and Panarin gets assists, and Kane does the same exact thing. And they have that, you know, that old-time best friend mechanic going on there. So Kane, if somebody was foolish enough to drop him and he's sitting somewhere on your waiver wire, still grab him immediately. I doubt that he is since he moved to the Rangers, but if by some miracle he is, grab him immediately because it's going to be 100% worth your time and your effort. He is getting a little bit older, so as far as keeping him, I'm not 100% sure on that part, but he's worth putting into your lineup rather than sitting at this point comparatively to when he was on Chicago.
Yeah, so far he isn't getting any points. I mean, in two games, he doesn't have any points. He is, like you said, playing with Panarin and Trocheck, which is wonderful spot to be in. He has six shots, so he is trying to get something going. 19 and a half minutes and 21 and three quarter minutes so far of time on ice, you know, almost 6 minutes of power play time. And 3.5 minutes of power play time. So he is getting looks. He should be deadly on the Rangers for the rest of this season and beyond if he chooses to stay there.
I think he might.
Yeah. I mean, especially with the Panarin connection, like it's often we, as observers of the sport, we can forget about the personal aspect of what is going on with these players, but being in the same environment as someone that you already know, that's huge for these guys, right? Because they're spending lots of time with these players. So it's very important to have someone that you connect with, either someone, you know, if you're, you know, from Europe, someone who's from your country, who you vibe with, or somebody from an old team, whether that's a previous NHL team or even a junior team. And, you know, this next guy that we're going to talk about, segueing into the personal aspect of this guy, Jacob Chychrun to Ottawa. First of all, that return very low. The Oilers paid a lot more for Matthias Ekholm, which we'll get to later. But in Ottawa, Chychrun has a bunch of family there. You know, in his last game, his grandpa made it to the game, and there was a sweet moment sort of after the game where Chychrun was being interviewed and showed a video of like his grandpa reacting to him scoring a goal. And it just reminds you that there's more to these hockey players than just what happens on the ice. And that also factors into all these decisions. It isn't just hockey decisions. So with Chychrun, he's been paired with Eric Brandstrom, which nice for Brandstrom to kind of get some mentoring from a guy like Chychrun. You know, in his two games, he's got a goal and an assist. Both came in this last game. Three shots, a hit, seven blocks. It'd be nice for him to kind of shoot more, but it's still very early with Ottawa here. 19 minutes, 16 seconds, 18 minutes, 53 seconds were his time on ice for both of those games. And also, curiously, more penalty kill time than power play time right now for Chychrun. Shabbat still has that top power play spot locked down, but if that power play slumps at all, I would not be surprised to see Ottawa just stick Chychrun up there, try and give Shabbat, who has been a workhorse in Ottawa, some break, have him play even strength minutes instead of heavier on the power play. That will be good for Shabbat because he's averaged, like, he's been one of the top defenders in average time on ice.
He's over 25
for like the past,
it's nuts.
Over 25 game for the past three or four seasons. And Chychrun can play that amount too. So I wouldn't be surprised if Chychrun takes over the power play and we see Shabbat's minutes come down and Chychrun just find another gear. He's playing on a competitive team now in Ottawa. They're pushing for a playoff spot, 5-game win streak. It's a great spot for him. Jacob, what do you think?
Yeah, Chychrun, the thing is, he doesn't have to be the guy in Ottawa. Shabbat is already that guy. So he doesn't need to be the number one defender who's, you know, eating up minutes and, you know, trying to do everything like he was in Arizona. He's not going to be relied on to be the everything type defenseman. Now he's going to have a slightly more reduced role as he, you know, grows his game in maybe a different way. So fantasy impact wise, he's going to have slightly less ice time than he would have in Arizona, but his points aren't necessarily going to drop off because he's still going to be getting those opportunities, but against, I don't want to say lesser opponents, but a little bit more easy as far as competition goes. Because when you're not the top defenseman, you're going up against players that aren't on the top line. So he will have those opportunities to score and he will have those defensive opportunities to shut people down. So his overall numbers will stay fairly similar, if not go up just a bit more because of the lessened responsibility. So he's absolutely somebody that you're going to want to start rather than sit in these types of situations. Ottawa is pushing hard for that playoff spot. So there is going to be production coming from all of their top players, and Chychrun will likely be one of them.
Absolutely. Chychrun is a hold. He's a start. He's an acquire if the cost isn't too high. I just acquired Chychrun in a trade this week in my dynasty league. I sent over Adam Fox for Chychrun, Alexander Holtz, Ivan Mirshnishenko, and a conditional fifth. It was only a conditional fifth because that was the only pick left that this guy had. He was a contender looking to boost his D core. And part of my impetus for doing this trade is salary related, which I don't need to get into. But basically, in the league that I play in, Fox, it's custom salary cap, and Fox was due for a big salary uptick raise next year. So I wasn't super thrilled to pay that. So I sent him out for those assets, and the conditional was under the condition that if this team finishes the regular season in first place, I get the pick. And they're 1 point back of first place right now. So almost like a guaranteed pick for myself, but it just kind of depends on how the rest of the schedule shakes out for them. If you can acquire Chychrun and it doesn't cost you a lot, if you're retooling and you can send out a win now piece for Chychrun, that's a beautiful trade in my opinion. I've always loved Chychrun. He loves to shoot. He throws hits. He gets you blocks. He gets points. I mean, what's not to like? Obviously, the injuries is kind of the biggest thing with Chychrun, but hopefully he's healthy now. He's been sitting for like 10 games, so he should be raring to go. But Chychrun, love me some Chychrun. We got another defender to talk about here next up. Jacob, why don't you talk to us about McCabe?
Yeah, Jake McCabe went to the Toronto Maple Leafs. And to say the Leafs are all in is a bit of an understatement at this point. They've been gearing up because they know they're going to be playing Tampa, and Tampa has been gearing up at the same time. So adding McCabe gives a little bit more solidification to their defense. And McCabe is going to be relied on in Toronto to eat up big minutes that are defense oriented. He's never been a big offensive player. He's never been the guy to score, you know, a bunch of goals from the back end. He does chip in a few assists and a few goals here and there, because he is willing to shoot the puck. But McCabe's value fantasy wise comes from his ability to block shots, eat up big minutes on the penalty kill, and his ability to throw hits. He's not a huge guy. He's only about 6 feet tall, but he's still willing to throw his weight around and toss the body. And that's really where you're going to see value from a player like him. Now that he's in Toronto instead of Chicago, his role is going to be lessened as far as, you know, his responsibility, because in Chicago he was playing with Seth Jones and on the top unit. But in Toronto, he's going to be relied on more for his defense and less for his ability to carry a game, which he does have the ability to sometimes. So if you're able to pick up McCabe from a waiver wire, there's a small chance. I know he's rostered at about a 70% rate in the leagues that I'm in. So there's a chance that he might be sitting on your waiver wire. But otherwise, he's the kind of player that you're going to want to put in a depth role so that he can still pick up those categories and hits and blocks, and he'll give you that, you know, kind of back end coverage as opposed to being one of your primary scorers type of thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. In his three games with Toronto so far, no points, but he's got 4 shots, 4 hits, 2 blocks. Not too bad. He's paired mostly with TJ Brody last night in the Vancouver game. In the three games so far, he's averaged 20 minutes and 59 seconds, 20 minutes and 29 seconds, and then 13 minutes and 9 seconds. And that was with last night's game against Vancouver. The thing there is Toronto played 7D that game. Okay. They played 11 and 7. This is something that Edmonton has been doing off and on all year. The 11 and 7, trying to spread out the ice time between defensemen. You know, it makes sense as you're kind of pushing to the end of the playoffs. You already have a spot locked down, so just try and spread things out so that when you're in the playoffs and you're in situations where you need to shorten the bench, the guys aren't worn out from a long run. So just comparatively to the rest of the defense in Toronto for this last game, basically there's only one other defender who played less than McCabe, and that was another acquisition, Luke Shen. He played 12 minutes, 10 seconds. Justin Hall, or Hole, played 15 minutes, 43 seconds. Morgan Riley played 21 minutes, 39 seconds. Giordano played 15 minutes, 2 seconds. Eric Gustafson, 14 minutes, 2 seconds. And Brody played 19 minutes, 16 seconds. So that's going to be an interesting thing to sort of take a look at going forward. You know, if they're going to play 7D a lot, is McCabe going to be towards the bottom in terms of time on ice, or is he going to sneak more into the 15 to 17 minute range? That might be the best sort of deployment for him, so you can get all those counting stats, the hits, the shots, the blocks, because he's not going to get you points at all. And another guy who's not really going to get any points, but is looking pretty good so far in his new team is Gavrikov. You know, he got traded to LA. He's mostly been paired with Matt Roy, which that seems to be a good pair so far. In two games played, you know, no points. He's got 2 shots, 3 hits, 1 block, 16 minutes, 13 seconds, 18 minutes, 55 seconds, and then mostly penalty kill time, which is kind of what I expected. You know, he had 53 seconds of penalty kill time in the one game and then 3 minutes and 3 seconds in the other game. So, you know, a defensive role, which makes sense. We kind of knew that that's what he was sort of marketed as, you know, and it's going to give, you know, the coach over there, Todd McClellan, a lot of depth options down the stretch and into the playoffs. We'll probably see an uptick in peripherals. You know, McClellan likes his veterans. He has played younger guys a lot more since arriving to LA. You know, I remember his time in Edmonton, and he would definitely defer to veterans a lot. He was that kind of coach. So we'll see if that sort of thing happens down the stretch and into the playoffs. But I definitely suspect that Gavrikov will be leaned on a lot down the stretch in must-win games. Jacob, what do you got on Gavrikov?
Yeah, Gavrikov is kind of similar to McCabe in the way that he plays. He's got that, you know, defensive physical style to him. And that's important in the West because it plays a little bit heavier out there. And yeah, with LA really in the mix and competing for a playoff spot in the West, they're going to need that, you know, solidification on defense to kind of round out how the rest of their core is playing. Their overall defensive numbers are not fantastic, especially considering their goaltending has been good but shaky, would be the best way to call it. So yeah, adding a player like him really kind of helps lock down that issue. So if anything, if you add Gavrikov to your team and you have other, you know, LA Kings such as like Phoenix Copley, who's in goal, who usually starts in goal, or if you picked up Korpisalo, who got traded to the Kings, you might see an increase in their numbers because Gavrikov's on a team or on their team now. So he's a really good just defensive style defenseman, and yeah, having him in your lineup, you're going to get the same effect as you would McCabe.
Yeah, basically that's like, yeah, a depth role, you know, for your fantasy team. He's not going to be really one of your top six guys. Hopefully he might be like a 5 or 6 on a fantasy team just to kind of raise the floor with your peripherals. That's just kind of how it is with Gavrikov. So that's the top 5 TSN trade bait board. We're just going to go back and forth now and just go through guys that popped up, just little deals or big deals here and there. So Jacob, why don't you get started on your first guy that you want to talk about?
One of the, I don't want to call him a big fish, but a little bit more of a sleeper kind of a pickup would be Verana going to St. Louis. He kind of wore out his stay in Detroit. They just seemed to kind of sour on him as the year went on. They sent him down to the minors and they brought him up and then they didn't want to play him. And they eventually moved him over to St. Louis. St. Louis tossed out a bunch of high-end pieces in Tarasenko, and they're going to be looking to recoup that scoring touch that they lost. And Verana is the exact type of player that can do that for them. He's got an elite shot. Mm-hmm. He's known for scoring points. He's not huge on the physical end, but he's a bit of a sleeper, in my opinion, because he is going to get that opportunity in St. Louis to actually throw up some points. And he's going to be getting top playing time in order to have that opportunity. So yeah, if Verana is on your waiver wire, which there's a very decent chance that he is because he spent time in the AHL, he might be worth picking up in a depth role to see how he performs with St. Louis. I think he has a great chance there, and I think he's going to be a good pickup for deeper in your lineup.
Yeah, Verana, definitely a good pickup to sort of round out your lineup. You know, if you got a streamer spot, you know, or if you're in a keeper or dynasty and you're just kind of rounding out your lineup, he's a good guy to take a flyer on. Definitely not a piece to be sort of a fixture on your team. but definitely a guy to take a flyer on for, you know, for a bit to see kind of how he pans out. Yeah. Like you said, obviously things didn't pan out in Detroit, kind of how they were hoping. You know, there's a lot of different factors and there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes that went on that we don't know now that we probably won't know. But like, you know, like we kind of said earlier in the show, there's more to the hockey players than just the hockey they play. So a lot of things going on there. The first guy that I want to talk about, Rasmus Sandin. I think that's how you say his last name.
Yep.
Traded to Washington. And now this, I think this is a great return for Washington. They gave up, you know, Eric Gustafson and some picks for Rasmus Sandin. And he's only played one game so far with Washington, but he was paired with Trevor Van Riemsdyk. You know, Washington, it sounds like John Carlson is probably out for the close to the rest of the regular season, if not the rest of the regular season. So they're trying Sandin out first pairing, you know, first game. He got 21 minutes and 40 seconds of time on ice, 3 assists. One of those assists was on the power play, no shots, 3 hits, 1 block. I suspect that as he plays more on the power play, those shot totals, they're going to go up. He's going to be shooting on the power play. He got just under 3 minutes of power play time on ice for Washington, the most of any defender. He was out there on the top power play with Ovi, Backstrom, Oshie, Kuznetsov. You love that, especially for the rest of the season. This is definitely a guy to take a flyer on, round out your lineup. That's what a lot of these guys are probably going to be that we're going to talk about. And, you know, comparatively to the rest of the D-core that played, or what's left of the D-core, Trevor Van Riemsdyk, 19 minutes, 30 seconds. Vincent Iorio, I think that's how you say his last name, 14 minutes, 48 seconds. He's a draft pick from 2 drafts ago for Washington. Gabriel Carlson, 19 minutes. Alexiev, 23 minutes and 7 seconds. Matt Irwin, 18 minutes. So he's going to be one of the top guys played in Washington. They're going to spread things around. They know they're not making the playoffs, so they're just going to let these guys play. They're just going to try and be as competitive as they can, and then they're going to give Ovi his goals. So in the very least, if Sandin doesn't get the shots, he's going to get the assists with Ovi on the power play. That's almost guaranteed. As long as he stays on that power play, those assists are going to keep coming, and hopefully he gets comfortable, starts shooting more. Again, this is just one game. Sandin and Washington, what do you think of that, Jacob?
Yeah, that was a great move by Washington because they picked up a defenseman that was, in my opinion, a bit undervalued while he was in Toronto. So now he's really going to get that opportunity to step up and play that big-time role that I think he has the ability to do. He's not going to be your, you know, eat up 27 minutes type of defenseman, but he can play 22 to maybe 23 at max, and he's going to score points. He does throw his body around. He's a solid overall defenseman, and he's a great stopgap for Carlson's absence. And even the fact that Sandin is just much, much younger than Carlson, so he's going to have more longevity on a place like Washington. Ovechkin might be getting older, but he's still Alex Ovechkin. He's still going to be scoring goals. He's still going to be getting points. So yeah, having Sandin on that top unit is really going to boost both of them, and you're not going to see any drop off in Ovechkin's production. Really, you're just going to see an increase in Sandin's production. So I love that move. And if you have Sandin as a fantasy owner, you should be cheering in the streets on the fact that he finally got off Toronto and will be able to play a bit more of a prominent and offensive role on a team like Washington.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, there were stretches earlier in the season where Sandin was playing more. I believe there was a stretch where Morgan Riley missed some games, and so he was kind of filling in on some power play. And in those games, his ice time definitely got up in the 20 to 23 minute mark. But for the most part, like even just in the past 10 games, he was averaging between 16 and 19 minutes a game playing in Toronto. So definitely nice to see him sort of get an audition in the top spot. We'll see how that carries over into next year. Definitely for rest of the season, a guy I'd be willing to take a flyer on. And Carlson, how John Carlson sort of affects him next year, we'll see what else Washington does. But I would be totally okay with Sandin second pairing. And if he gets power play time, I don't know at that point, if they go with two defenders, if they play Carlson and Sandin on the power play, that could be interesting. Or because Carlson's getting older, if Sandin really does well, maybe they just let Carlson take more even strength minutes and play Sandin in the more offensive role. So, Jacob, what's the next deal that you liked here?
One that I really liked was Tyler Bertuzzi going to Boston. He was a player that I personally was hoping that Buffalo would have made a call on to be like, hey, he's gritty, he's got some sandpaper to him, but he also has scoring touch, and he's easily a top six forward, and he plays a big game. He didn't have a great, you know, start to this year, and he hasn't, you know, been throwing up a bunch of points like he has in previous years. But he's still the same type of player, and he adds that rounded game to a team. And it's not that Boston needs anybody to round out their game, because they're essentially the perfect team this year. Good luck stopping Boston. A bunch of people have been personally victimized by them this year, Buffalo included recently, got spanked 7-1. So yeah. Adding Bertuzzi is just, in my opinion, a response to how much the East has been spending to build their teams. Toronto's buying, Tampa's buying, Carolina's kind of buying, the Rangers are buying, New Jersey was buying. So Boston was like, well, we're already amazing, let's buy a couple more. And they picked up Orlov and Bertuzzi. But Bertuzzi, I think, is that key forward pickup to kind of stick anywhere in their middle six, second or third line, however they want to utilize him. I know he was playing with Coyle on the third line, so he can be used anywhere in any situation, and he's going to have success. Fantasy-wise, he's the exact type of player that you want, and now that he's went from Detroit to Boston, you're going to see a couple of jumps in his offensive numbers, and you're going to see some good consistency in his physical numbers too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I don't really have anything to add other than what you've said already about Bertuzzi, but going into a bit more of a rapid fire for the rest of the show here, Matthias Ekholm to Edmonton. I'm big fan of this move. He's been paired with Bouchard so far, three games. He's got an assist. He's got three shots, four hits, five blocks. He's kind of in that similar category as McCabe and Gavrikov in terms of guys that get you peripherals, don't get you a lot of shot, don't get you a lot of points. But the exception here with Ekholm is he's playing 5-on-5 minutes with Bouchard, and they are mostly being deployed with McDavid's line. Okay. So that is something to watch out for. If there's anybody who has a good floor and has good point potential at even strength, it's Matthias Ekholm, okay? He's played around 20 minutes a night every game since being there, 20 minutes, 50 seconds, 18 minutes, 21 minutes, and 29 seconds. And Ekholm has been really impressed with Bouchard, and his first impression of him was, wow, this kid has got a lot of vision. He can see the ice very well. He anticipates passes and all that sort of thing. So that's great to hear. And Ekholm is also a good mentoring figure for the young D in Edmonton, like Bouchard and Broberg. Jacob, who's the next guy you like?
I want to touch on the Buffalo acquisition of Jordan Greenway. I think he's a bit of an underrated pickup, especially for fantasy owners. He will definitely be a better option in Buffalo than he was in Minnesota. I've seen both press conferences from the head coach, Don Granato, and from GM Kevin Adams. They both really like this guy. And the way that they're both talking, it seems like in Alex Tuck's absence in the top six, Green Bay is going to get a shot to play on one of the top two lines. It's not likely he's going to get to play with Thompson and Skinner, since Quinn has been, you know, jumping up the ranks. There's somebody you might want to think about picking up is Jack Quinn. He's been scoring a lot recently. So Green Bay might end up on that second line playing with Dylan Cousins, who has been a consistent performer fantasy-wise and just in general. So Green Bay will be put in a bit more offensive role than he was in Minnesota. And he's still a physical player, so he's going to still give you plenty of coverage across the board, but his points might jump up just a little bit, and he might be worth putting in your, you know, deeper parts of your lineup if Buffalo can continue to maintain their scoring pace, which they've done all year, so there's no reason to think that it's going to suddenly drop off just because Green Bay got added.
Yeah, and Green Bay is a great depth move in the very least for Buffalo there. Another potentially great depth move that we still are going to wait on and see what happens is Yesa Puljujarvi to Carolina. Hasn't played a game yet. As of Friday, he was still in Edmonton sorting out some visa issues. He has an appointment tomorrow to figure those out. Carolina plays on Tuesday in Montreal. So in the very least, he's going to meet with the team in Montreal for their game, and hopefully visa issues are sorted out. I know Sandin missed his first game with Washington for similar reasons. There was visa issues just from going from Canada to the States, just paperwork to sort out. So it's going to be interesting to see what his usage is going to be. I'm anticipating a sort of middle six role. He has a lot of defensive strengths that are going to help him succeed in Rod Brind'Amour's system. But there's also the potential that he plays with Sebastian Aho. They had the connection there in their gold-winning World Junior Championship for that Finland team. So there is that connection. There are guys on that team that Puljujärvi knows. So that's going to be interesting to see how that unfolds. And if this is going to be the trade that sort of sparks Puljujärvi into sort of a Nichushkin renaissance, just like how Nichushkin went from Dallas to Colorado. It took, I think, a year or two for him to start to see that uptick in point production, and that could be the case for Puljujärvi with his next team. So, Jacob, who do you got next?
Next, I want to shift more towards a player I would avoid rather than one that I kind of liked. I feel bad for him just because of how he got traded. It was originally Jonathan Quick went from LA to Columbus in a very unceremonious fashion, and I don't think it was a very classy move in the way that it was done. But Columbus did right by him by trading him back to a playoff team and somebody that might have a chance to, you know, get him one more Stanley Cup before the end of his career. His numbers haven't been great by any means this year. He hasn't been winning games. And in Vegas, he'll have a slight opportunity there, but it's not going to be a huge one. Aiden Hill has been good for them. Logan Thompson has been good for them. So Quick kind of slots in as the third goaltender. I don't think he's going to have a big enough role playing that it's going to be worth grabbing him or picking him up. And he doesn't have the numbers this year to justify playing him in general. So while the trade is big because of his name and a couple of the pieces that got moved to Columbus, as a fantasy owner, he should absolutely not just be a sit. He's a drop candidate for me. Even though he moves from LA to Columbus to Vegas, him playing in LA, at least, you know, there's a chance that he gets a win because LA is still a solid team, but he's going to have a much lesser role on Vegas. And I think he's much more of a draft candidate.
Yeah, a quick word about Quick. Thompson presently injured. I don't know how long that injury is going to last. So I feel like Quick is going to get a look soon. And maybe this move to acquire Quick, maybe it's so they have a three-headed monster. Maybe it's because the injury to Thompson is worse than they first anticipated. But that's going to be an interesting storyline to see, because Vegas and LA are both in the Pacific. They both have 80 points. Vegas has two games in hand. Depending on how this shakes out, we could see a Vegas-LA series in the playoffs, which would be juicy. Love it. Give me some of that. Speaking of LA, my guy, Korpisalo to LA. This guy, I think his value has really gone up. I think Korpisalo, if he catches fire here in the next week to 2 weeks, I think Todd McClellan's going to ride the hot goaltender in Korpisalo until the cows come home. Okay. Copley, he was doing good. And I think they might still have a 1A, 1B type situation, kind of go back and forth until one of them gets hot and then ride them. But I think Korpisalo is really the candidate for the player who's going to get hot. Last night versus the Blues, 2 goals against on 26 shots, a 923 save percentage. That's quality start right there. He has 7 quality starts in his last 10 games played, and he only has 16 quality starts on the season. Okay. So this is a potential buy low and reap the rewards later, because I think Korpisalo is going to knock it out of the park here. If you can buy, buy. As long as you're not selling the farm, I definitely say buy. Jacob, I think we'll do one more for each of us, and then we'll call it an episode. So, who's your last guy here, Jacob?
Yeah. I'm going to jump on to, the Minnesota Wild picking up John Klingberg.
Mm.
His return was minimal compared to, you know, what his caliber of play, could possibly justify, but playing on the Ducks and the numbers he was putting up were just not great. So his return ultimately ended up being much lower than was probably anticipated, but he's a quote unquote under the radar pick pickup for Minnesota, because he adds that offensive flair to their back end. His defensive numbers not great at the moment, but his offensive numbers are still decent enough, and he has the offensive skill to go up a little bit more. He's a good, you know, skilled defenseman, and playing on a team like Minnesota, they have the offense to kind of complement his style of play, and he's only going to make things better from the back end. So with Minnesota in the mix, it's going to be good for his production from a fantasy perspective, especially getting off of the Ducks, who have the worst goal differential in the NHL right now. If you have the opportunity to pick up Klingberg, he's somebody that I think would be worth the investment because of how Minnesota plays.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. Definitely worth a flyer. My last guy, a trade that was made way before the deadline, Bo Horvat to the Islanders. He's playing on the top line. Barzal's injured right now, but Barzal might be coming close to a return, so we could see them play together on the top line. They did that before Barzal's injury. 13 games played so far with the Islanders, 5 goals, 3 assists, 38 shots. Love it. 7 hits, 17 blocks, and between 18 to 22 minutes a night. Okay. Horvat is coming into his own this year. He's staying on the Islanders, probably going to be paired with Barzal till the end of time. He is a guy to pick up and keep on your team. One last little note. Ryan O'Reilly was seen today with a splint on a finger on his left hand. So he's probably going to be out for a couple of games, maybe a couple of weeks. So that's a bit of a blow to Ryan O'Reilly and the Toronto Maple Leafs. But that is all the time that we have for today. Next week, we will talk about rebuilding versus retooling, the pros and cons of each for your Keeper League or Dynasty League team. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at THW Fantasy. I'm on Twitter at Caleb Scouting.
I'm also on Twitter at Stro67.
If you are watching on YouTube, be sure to like this video and subscribe to the Hockey Writers YouTube channel. If you are listening in podcast format, subscribe to the podcast and please leave us a review on whatever platform you listen to. You've been listening to the Hockey Writers Fantasy Forecheck. Keep your stick on the ice, get pucks in deep, and give it 110%, eh? I'll see you next week.